You are listening to Arrivé by the Cycling Podcast.
Well, hello and welcome to this special bonus Arrivé episode from the Cycling Podcast Féminin. Yes, we are talking all about the first Grand Tour of the year for the women, and that is the Vuelta Femenina. And there is so much to talk about in this episode that I'm not going to waffle for a second longer. I'm going to leave all the waffle up to my co-host, Rebecca Charlton. Hello, Rebecca.
Hello. Great to be back. I just have to warn you that I've had a double espresso and a can of Diet Coke. So, yeah, I'm not sure if it's going to be waffle or just quick fire round.
Well, it's going to be, we are going to be able to cover seven stages in the space of what we normally cover one classic in, aren't we?
I'm ready for it. I'm ready.
We've got all the caffeine we need for a Monday morning. Anyway, and obviously you've also been very busy as Ninka Vinka fan club president. Ninka Vinka has been keeping you very busy this week, hasn't she? That should come first on the top of big things to say about the Vuelta Femenina.
Of course it should. That is the primary thing we need to talk about. Of course, I've got my Ninka Vinka fan club president handbook out in full force, and I must say this started because I loved her name so much. And who knew she was going to just exceed our expectations and be this spectacular? Took ninth in the GC, best young rider, and just what a legend. What a ride.
And still the name. The name still remains. It still remains a brilliant name. Well, shall we, apart, I haven't even written that in my race summary. I'm sorry to say, Rebecca, I'm sure there'll
That's
be
what
a,
I'm here for.
Yeah, or there'll be a letter in the post, won't there, from the official fan club being like, you know, you are not giving enough airtime to this rider. I'm sure I'll definitely get some trolls on social media about that. But I'll give us the rest of the race summary about what went on in those seven stages. I've been trying to be as brief as possible. And well, it all started with a team time trial, didn't it? It kicked off the action. Little Trek took the win there. But the biggest story of that day was that Visma Lisa Bike were forced to start without a full team present. The team later blamed being held up by the UCI's pre-race bike checks, which they say were understaffed and which in turn had been delayed by the late arrival of another team, which we then later found out was Movistar. Well, in stage two, Visma Lisa Bike made up for that heartache with Marianne Vos winning with relative ease in a sprint finish. Stage three also ended in an expected sprint, but this time Vos was trumped by Femke Heritzer of SD Works, taking her first ever World Tour win. But it was on a hilly stage four that the GC battle kicked off. With all the favourites still together after two categorised climbs of the day, it was on the descent to the finish with 6 kilometres to go that none other than Anna van der Breggen attacked. A brief hesitation saw her quickly gain distance and she held on for the victory, taking a valuable 12 seconds on all her rivals and her first victory since her comeback. Vos won the sprint for second ahead of Demi Vollering. To the mountains then on stage five, where the FDJ Suez train put pressure on all the rest on the first climb of the day. Although numbers swelled by the foot of the final summit, attacks from Marije Meiring and Juliette Labous splintered the group once again until a group of only six remained. Those being Anna van der Breggen, Demi Vollering, Marlon Reusser, Nie Fischer-Black, Cedrine Kerbol and Paulina Royackers. With less than 3 kilometres remaining, Vollering attacked with Reusser the only rider to briefly cling on to her wheel. Vollering comfortably took the win then with 24 seconds over Reusser and 56 seconds over third place Anna van der Breggen. Stage six was the last opportunity for the fast women, Vos coming out on top yet again in a photo finish with Misha Bredevold. And something of a stalemate between the top rivals broke out on the final mountainous stage. Vollering, van der Breggen and Reusser matched each other pedal stroke for pedal stroke all the way up the climb. Van der Breggen's pace at the front dropped most of the rest, leaving just Vollering, Reusser and Kerbol in her wheel. Then at 800 metres to go, Vollering finally broke free for the win. And crucially, Reusser also went solo behind to leapfrog van der Breggen in the overall standings. The final results then, Vollering took the red jersey, 1 minute and 1 second ahead of Reusser and 1 minute and 16 seconds ahead of van der Breggen. Well, Rebecca, it was everything that we hoped for this first sort of grand tour battle between Demi Vollering and Anna van der Breggen. And it, I mean, it's fair to say Vollering, you know, although van der Breggen had that stage win, you know, early on, Vollering did come out on top. First blood to her, wasn't it?
Yeah, I just feel like there's so much to dive into in that dynamic. But I guess, yeah, let's start with that victory from Anna van der Breggen being the first since she's come back from several years out of the peloton. And I feel like as the race went on, which of course we'll get to, I was possibly quite critical about her tactical approach, about the way she rode, given her nous, given how much she knows. But then I've got to come back to the fact that, yeah, she's been out of the sport. That's her first victory back. Not only a stage win, but of course, a successful week for the team as a whole and finishing on the podium and getting combativity. So I think all in all, she will be rather delighted. But I think what was interesting from Anna van der Breggen was saying after that stage victory that actually she has to ride differently now. The approach to these races has to be different to that in the past, where we would have just seen her either solo off to victory and nobody ever get her back, or her and Annemiek van Vleuten just going head to head to head all the time. But I think what I love about it is that golden era of those two names I've just mentioned going up against each other, where I feel reliving that now with her going up against Vollering with the added dynamic that she was her DS. It's absolutely juicy. But what a brilliant overall victory in the red jersey for Vollering. And I think expected. I think we expected it.
We did, didn't we? I mean, there was that kind of turning point when we had on stage four van der Breggen taking the win. There was a bit of a moment of like, oh, hold on a minute. You know, could this be the first sign that actually van der Breggen is well, we always knew she was going to be extremely strong, but actually race winning level strong. You know, we have seen Vollering be totally imperious on all these kind of big climbs for so long now. But like you say, I mean, it's exciting because we're seeing sort of a new van der Breggen. She is having to find other ways of winning and, you know, to attack on the descent. It's totally unexpected, wasn't it? And that, I mean, that's how she got the win. But that it was that element of surprise. Also the hesitation behind, because everyone looked to Demi Vollering like, oh, right, that's your rival. You know, that's your sort of great enemy. You have to go after her. And then, you know, Vollering was either unwilling to do the work there or kind of felt, well, you know, what about everyone else? Everyone else has to, you know, bring down Anna van der Breggen as well. And then she just got a huge gap. And then they kind of brought her back in, didn't they, briefly? And then she'd kind of just went out again. But I think it's also showing that Anna van der Breggen, she, as much as there's obviously going to be pressure on her to perform, she has a lot more freedom than I think that she used to. You know, she used to have to just go for the win. And normally when the pressure is on in that, you can't be doing anything that might in any way afterwards be seen to be a bit of a daft move. I mean, if Anna van der Breggen had made that move and it hadn't worked out and it would have been a few years ago when she was the out and out favourite, you'd have been like, what was she doing? Wasting her energy there. You know, that the whole thing is gone because she was doing something a bit silly. But instead, she's like, right, I've got to find these other ways of winning and getting the advantage. And also, you know, if that had, she didn't go into the lead, the overall lead at that point, because her teammate Femke Heritzer still had it. But if she had, you know, that's a much more preferable position to be in, isn't it? To defend a lead rather than trying to gain seconds on someone else all the time. So it's really thrilling. But we should say more about Demi Vollering, the person that she was, you know, that we say set up as being the great rivalry, van der Breggen and Vollering. A fantastic win for her, and really she must be feeling the monkey is off her back now, mustn't she? You know, she's had a few successes this season, but this one in a stage race, in the highest level of stage race, in, you know, what is effectively one of the Grand Tours, although that could be debated, to beat van der Breggen quite conclusively is huge for her, actually.
It is, and it's one thing to come in as the favourite and being quietly confident that you feel like you know where your form is. But actually, as you say, to secure that must be a huge, huge relief. And I think we saw an incredibly emotional post-race interview, didn't we? And you know, sort of the stage, well, two stages before the conclusion of the race, wasn't it? And it felt like there were so many reasons behind that. I think she openly talked a lot about mental health and what somebody close to her is going through. And I feel like that was a lot of her emotion coming to a head as well. And perhaps part of that is that relief of, I think she's talked about this a lot. I think Capecchi's talked about this a lot recently as well, is actually absorbing the media pressure and actually reading and listening to what people are saying about them and really feeling that people maybe don't always know what is going on behind closed doors. So I feel like there has been a lot of pressure on her, everybody dissecting her early season, and she has gone out and she has proven why she went into that race as the favourite. And as you say, she delivered that with such conviction. And I can only imagine that's, yeah, a really important headspace to get into for the rest of the Grand Tour season. And it was really, really interesting for me actually watching how the final stage played out, because I was really going back and forth in my head as to how Anna van der Breggen was playing it, because of course we saw her pulling like the metronome we know she can be on the front for just kilometer after kilometer. And of course, again, with hindsight, you can say, yes, that completely whittled it down. It took it down to the absolute pinnacle of favourites that could hang on. So in that sense, there was a huge job done by Anna van der Breggen. But was she ever going to lose Demi Vollering? Did she think she was going to ride at such a pace that Vollering wouldn't keep contact? Because I was urging her to really force Vollering through at one point on that final. I've got so many questions. I'd love to know your take on that, because I was sort of doing my armchair critique, sat at home talking to the TV screen by myself. And I'd love to know your thoughts on that, because could it have been a different outcome? Did she know, okay, I'm not going to get the better of Vollering, but maybe I'll lose Marlon Reusser, maybe I'll lose Cabal, maybe this is the only way I can play it? Or should she have sat back and played it differently? I think it was interesting to hear her say that you cannot win a race in the same way that she used to, that the dynamic has changed in the peloton, that the ability of the peloton's come on so much. But then it seemed like she went back to the tactics of old, where she was just thinking she'd ride everybody off her wheel. So, yeah, I thought it was really intriguing.
I think, yeah, it's interesting, because really that kind of job, you want that to be done by a member of your team. The job of being at the front of the group and taking, you know, softening up everyone else's legs and shelling quite a lot of riders out the back. Ideally, and we have seen that from FDJ Suez, obviously Demi Vollering's team, that's what they've been doing. We've seen a huge power play from them with the likes of Vita Musique and Juliette Labousse, and even seeing her with on the first mountain stage with Ali Wollaston at the front. She was softening everyone's legs up first, and then it was Musique, and then it was Labousse, and then even when Musique was dropping back, she was coming back to the front again every time the kind of group swelled. So really, Anna van der Breggen was kind of doing the job that she would be hoping that her teammates would be doing. But I mean, they don't have the climbing breadth and depth. Well, they didn't have the climbing breadth and depth at this race, did they, SD Works? I mean, she had the likes of Misha Bredewald, who, you know, is really punchy, really fast finisher. Obviously, Femke Heritzer, who is, you know, a sprinter. She just didn't really have that backup in her team to be that kind of train on the front on a mountain to kind of lose all the other riders. And you're right, I mean, van der Breggen was sort of riding at a high pace, but she isn't that sort of explosive rider, is she? She sort of has never been that explosive rider. She's always makes sort of one attack, and that attack, or historically, I should say, she always makes that one attack, and that attack sticks, and then she's gone, and then it's like a time trial. That's how we conventionally see her ride. Whereas, you know, back in the days where she was going up against Van Vleuten was the explosive one and would be the attack again and again and again. So obviously when Van der Breggen's coming up against Vollering, and Vollering is managing to stay on her wheel, there's not so much that Van der Breggen can then do. And I think also just that Vollering clearly had the strongest legs out and out, didn't she? There was sort of no question that she was the strongest rider this week. But that actually leads me on perfectly to talking about, we've been talking about Van der Breggen and Vollering as a rivalry, but really we should be talking about Van der Breggen and Vollering and Marlon Reusser as a three-way rivalry. That's what we should be talking about, because Marlon Reusser was phenomenal this week, wasn't she? And that, I think that's also why Van der Breggen had to be a little bit, not cagey on that last stage, but there wasn't too much she could do because she was trying to guard also her position. She only had 1 second on Reusser coming into that final day. So, you know, she had to be very mindful of not wanting to do anything that would allow Reusser to get the better of her. In the end, she couldn't do that. And Reusser actually leapfrogged her into second position on the overall standings. But, I mean, amazing from Marlon Reusser. And it's so interesting also to see a repeat of the first time we saw these three riders come together. All former SD Works riders. I mean, they were all on the same team last year, obviously, with Van der Breggen being their DS. Now all three of them on different teams. We saw them at Settimana Valenciana, you know, the first race to see them all come together, a stage race. And that finished exactly the same. Vollering on top, Marlon Reusser second, and then Van der Breggen third. And it's interesting to see, I think, Reusser's confidence grow since that point, because in that race, Vollering attacked and then Reusser just stuck with Van der Breggen right until the end, even though she kind of clearly had the legs to get the better of her. This time, Reusser wasn't thinking of guarding against Van der Breggen. She was thinking about, you know, I can probably contend against Vollering, who is kind of out and out the best. I think I can beat Vollering, as opposed to thinking I can beat Van der Breggen. I thought it was really interesting how far she's come on in such little time.
So, so interesting. You're going to have to keep me on track here because I've got so much to so much to dive into.
And it's also that caffeine. The caffeine isn't helping, is it?
It's not helping. I'm just like absolutely jittering all over the place here. But there's so, so many exciting talking points within that. And I think going back to my point on the way that Van der Breggen was riding, she's so intelligent, and it's easy for us to sit there at home and say, well, why is she pulling on the front? She knows exactly what she's doing. She wouldn't have been on the front pulling by mistake. And as you say, she had that podium to think about, not just following. And I think that what I love about Marlon Reusser is that confidence coming through. And it actually took me a little while for it to occur to me that actually that was what was at play with everybody having been at Team SD Works. And what a juicy way to see everybody transferring into different teams and go up against each other in that scenario. And I think what was even more impressive for me is, I think it's quite easy to forget how many difficulties Reusser has faced. And of course, the biggest dynamic here is we're seeing her in Movistar being given that opportunity to be a team leader, to go for the opportunities in a way that we didn't when she was working so tirelessly for other teammates as a domestique. But not only that, she, it's well documented, had chronic health problems that she was trying to overcome. And she, again, was very emotional in sharing that journey of just how difficult it had been, I guess, to even diagnose what was going on with her health and then try to come back from that. And also, I have to remind myself that in Flanders last season, she broke her jaw. She was on a liquid diet. She knocked half her teeth out. Like, she was in a really bad way after that heavy crash. So I feel like last season she had so much to contend with. And then she's come into this one just exploding into being one of the biggest favourites, one of the biggest talking points that we've got. And what I really observed about her on those sort of mountain stages and on the climbs is, On the final stage, when Vollering went, it was Reusser that was really holding that gap. And actually, like, I kept looking like, is she going to suddenly lose this time? And she didn't, did she? She just
once that distance was there, she just held it, which just shows how strong she was. She wasn't drifting back and back and back. She was holding that distance. So yeah, if you think of a scenario where she did manage to hold on, that could be really interesting indeed.
It's also interesting because obviously I think it's so easy to forget the team time trial that was the beginning of the week, because it's actually they don't normally have much effect on the overall finish of a race. But actually, I mean, Roysa lost about 15 seconds there. She was in the Movistar team, who they had a few kind of issues at the start, and they were sort of blamed by other teams actually for creating a kind of knock-on effect, turning up late for bike checks. The Movistar team also said that there was problems with the bike checks, and that's why they were even further delayed. But they didn't do that well at the team time trial. I mean, they kind of finished about 15 seconds down, I think it was, on SD Works, and a little bit less than that on FDJ Suez. So actually, that was quite a chunk of time, relatively, that Marlon Roysa could have had back if there'd been a bit of a better performance there. That would have meant that the gap between her and Vollering would have been even less. So it's so intriguing to see how far she's going to go. And as you say, Becca, you know, having the chronic health issues, she's going to be just improving from this point, obviously gaining in confidence and also gaining a definite leadership from the team, because I think she's come into this team and said it's between her and Leanna Lippert, and they're obviously very different styles of rider, but I think this is kind of cemented, you know, on these big climbs, Marlon Roysa is going to be Movistar's card, and they're obviously working for her, because we saw Mireille Meiring going off in the same way that we saw Juliette Labousse going off on that last climb. Juliette Labousse was obviously doing it for Vollering and for FDJ. Mireille Meiring is a Movistar rider trying to set up Marlon Roysa, so they know that she has it within her ability, which is even more exciting.
It's really, really exciting. And I've said it so many times already this season that we're getting talking points that we haven't had before. We're seeing a completely different Movistar setup with all the names you've mentioned animating so much of the action in the races. And I'm totally here for it. And yeah, I mean, it was a very negative start and probably not much to reflect on, but what an absolute nightmare in that opening team time trial. I mean, normally I kind of have a time trial on and think, like, not too much is going to happen. But it, of course, I was looking up thinking, what on earth is going on? This can't just be like one team forgetting to get to the start. You know, they're much better drilled than that. And why are we seeing team after team with like a couple of their riders not even on the ramp? And it's kind of the kind of anxiety dreams, it won't surprise you to hear that I have, Rose, is the kind of thing where I'm suddenly in the world tour peloton, I'm lining up for a time trial and I haven't made the start. Like, that's the kind of thing that I have, like, vivid dreams about happening.
That's probably the least surprising of what I imagine your vivid fever dreams. I imagine yours also involve escalators, flumes. You know, you've got a lot of anxieties about a lot of things, Becca, but that's less surprising. Not turning up to a team time trial, I think, is less surprising, in my opinion.
Well, I recently saw, you'll love this, I recently saw a thing pop up on Instagram, they're clearly getting the algorithm right, where he was absolutely fine, a boy was just hanging off the ski lift and people were trying to get him off. And this is why at the Tour de France Femme Mavic Swift I refused to get on the ski lift to go up to the top of the Tourmalet and spent about 14 kilometers walking, but I was vindicated in that decision. But yeah, it's the kind of anxiety dream I have that I'm going to miss the start of a TT, and so that is literally what we saw for rider after rider. And as you mentioned, affecting Visma Lisa bike quite dramatically at that start as well. So yeah, I can only imagine the stress that those teams had to manage with that. But yeah, back to your point, it was really interesting throughout the race to see that there was such close contention.
Yeah, well, we talk about that, you know, that Visma Lisa bike, you know, the whole mess that started in that team time trial, you know, them having to start. I think Imogen Wolfhard wasn't there, and some of the riders were turning up late and going down the ramp late. Because that could have been, they had Pauline Ferrand-Prévot obviously in their team, and obviously she was looking for a decent result. She, in the end, didn't start stage five. she said that she was not, that her, you know, statement was that she was not fit enough to continue. Obviously, she, you know, sustained a crash during the Classics and obviously hasn't recovered from that. But that could have been that. I mean, obviously, that kind of sort of logistical error could have been have really affected one of the top GC contenders. But yeah, obviously she was kind of off the ball, but we had a few riders, didn't we, that we didn't really see there that we'd be expecting to see there. Kasia Niewiadoma and Neve Bradbury, both of Canyon SRAM, both some of the first riders, some of the first main riders to drop off on the climbs all week, really. Yeah, what do you put that down to, Becca? Obviously, it's not been a good start to the season for Kasia Niewiadoma, has it?
I think she, yeah, I mean, she has openly been very disappointed, hasn't she, in how it's gone, and also, yeah, very candid in her appraisal of how this early season has gone. And she's said more than once, actually, that she's looking forward to closing this chapter of racing and that she's got a lot to look at in terms of her race preparation coming in next time. And I thought that was quite interesting because I think you were talking about this in the last episode, that she had nodded to the fact that a lot of people had done specific altitude training, they'd approached their spring campaign differently to her, and she felt that she was on the back foot because of it. And I do find it really interesting now we've got the prevalence of social media where we can follow along with what the riders are saying about their form. And so, yeah, I feel like that's probably the answer right there, is she feels like her preparation wasn't ideal. She's disappointed and she wants to come back much, much stronger later in the season. So I think she's going to go and sort of take stock and think about how she approaches the next block.
I mean, we know that she's now headed to altitude, but it did surprise me because actually before we started recording, Becca, we were kind of talking about, you know, about Kasia Niewiadoma, and you said, Rebecca, like she said, oh, she's looking forward to getting that it's all finished and she's looking forward to the head. And I said, I'm sure she said that exact quote at the end of the Classics that she's now said at the end of the Vuelta Femenina. So it does surprise me that she actually came to this race at all when she was so disappointed with how she was feeling. She really didn't feel like she had the right, she was, you know, there to contend during the whole Classics season. So it did surprise me that she carried on with this racing block when she obviously wasn't on form, but maybe it was kind of trying to ride herself back into condition.
Yeah, and it's difficult, isn't it, without knowing what conversations were had with DSs and in team meetings. And obviously the decision was made to go for it. And yeah, you can just sense that massive disappointment. And talking of DSs, Pauline Ferrand-Prévot, I think her DS was quite critical of how she was, wasn't he, in the Vuelta. But again, we've seen a different rider, haven't we, from race to race. So something's clearly going on. And in terms of her form, and I think that she's, yeah, again, openly talked about how her injury in the Classics got infected in her ankle. And that can be like quite serious, can't it? I mean, an infection on an open wound can make you quite ill. And yeah, she clearly wasn't very happy. But also to boot, what happened in that opening time trial. I mean, I'd be like, for goodness sake, well, I'm off. But I think there was probably, yeah, that's not psychologically where you want to be starting in contention for a Grand Tour. It's, yeah, it's really, really disappointing to start like that. I think she has said that she's suffering after this infection and she clearly just wasn't very happy. So yeah, I didn't know if the criticism openly levelled at her from her DS was very fair. But again, you don't know what conversations have been had in those meetings.
Well, we should move on from the GC battle, if we can bear to, because it is such a juicy one, isn't it? And talk a little bit about the fast finishes that we had. Vos taking two wins again. I mean, it's hard to talk about Vos, isn't it? Because she is so phenomenal. And she just always comes out and gets the goods, as she has however many hundred times in the past that she has.
Well, I've just checked. 257 wins we're up to now. I mean, what an absolute legend. And I'm just on Pro Cycling Stats now. 37. How is she still 37? Like, yeah. I kind of feel like her age must have finally caught up to me at some point. But she is remarkably still not even, she's not even approaching 40 yet. And she has been going for so many seasons. And I know that we, like you say, we run out of ways to describe just what an absolute goat she is. But I think you go back to the days where she would win absolutely everything across every single discipline. And she'd win the cross and she'd win the road and then win on the track. And we'd be like, no one's going to get close to her. But the fact that she is still taking these victories at this point in her career, with all the caveats and the changes in the peloton that we see now in the modern era of women's cycling, and she's still the GOAT. I just think she's remarkable. And you can see also the mark of respect that other riders, other sprinters have going up against her, can't you? And what a joy she is to watch every single time.
I mean, she's so done it so well, how she's found her niche, hasn't she? Because it would have been so easy to be this rider who has, you know, I mean, she's won the Giro before, but you would never say that she would win the Giro now. That you would think that it would be so easy to be trying to cling on to still winning across every single possible race that you used to win across. But she doesn't do that. She just really lays a focus in what she can win and where she can get the results, and then she just goes for that, and then she inevitably wins them. I mean, it's interesting because obviously we know she's not going to be as fast in a total bunch sprint like Lorena Vibus, and you know, something that is too hilly, too climby, she's also not going to do well in. But she just found that middle ground, and she still manages to get the best out of all these other riders, you know, to beat the likes of Misha Brederode, who obviously won at Amstel Gold, you know, just a few weeks ago. It's not like she's going up against a second tier teams and winning. She's just still out and out beating all the rest. We should also give a moment to celebrate Femke Heritsa, her first Women's World Tour win. I mean, we always see her as a or is it the first Women's World Tour win, Rebecca? This is where you come in with your conspiracy theory, isn't it?
Well, she looks, her stature on the bike looks so much like Vibus, doesn't it? And you know, I've been joking along about the fact that you can definitely look from a distance and think they're the same rider. But what I think about Femke Heritsa in that scenario was, she, you could see quite some kilometers out that SD Works had that absolutely drilled to perfection, and that it was hers to lose. They set her up so perfectly, but she had to win that. She still had to secure that sprint in the way she did to take victory. And as you say, you know, against the likes of Voss. And she clearly is in awe of Voss. She's grown up as a rider looking up to her so, so much. And so to go up to, against her in that scenario, I think, as I say, not only, she had the pressure, I guess. She had a lot of pressure on her shoulders that the team had done everything to set that up for her, and she finished it off. And I thought it was brilliant, and the conviction that she did that in. And what a lovely scenario for the team that they've got Vibus, and they've got a younger, well, actually, hang on.
Or do they have just two of exactly the same rider? Or do they have Vibus as well? I don't know. This is where the plot thickens, doesn't it? I guess what I really enjoyed seeing from an SD Works point of view is they seem to be so, often when we see them win, it's almost like, well, that was expected and well done. What a relief. We kind of succeeded where we were meant to succeed. Actually, this week, we saw a lot of them kind of celebrating wins that were in some ways unexpected. I mean, the Femke Heritsa win was certainly, you know, she was surprised herself, I guess, to win there. And then Anna van der Breggen's surprise little move the very next day. It was nice at that point to see a really beaming Anna van der Breggen at winning that stage. Obviously, first from her comeback, so obviously that makes a difference. But just the whole team was so delighted, enthusiastic and showing it, which actually we don't really haven't in the past often seen that. You know, they're more like, you know, good job, mate, well done. But not like, oh, that was amazing, well done. So it was kind of a nice, slightly different SD Works that we saw. this week.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think that's going back to what you were saying about the fact that they are trying things. Like Anna van der Breggen is trying different moves and seeing if they pay off. And they're kind of giving themselves that permission and that freedom to play around a little bit. And I agree. And it was quite funny, actually, watching Femke Heritzer celebrate with van der Breggen, because I think Anna always kind of has that calm. She's just always looks calm, doesn't she? I used the word metronome earlier. But she, you know, whether it's in the race or out of the race, she's just very, very level. But Femke was like, oh my God, this is amazing. So it was quite funny watching that dynamic of her forcing van der Breggen to like really celebrate it and really show that emotion. But also Misha Bredewold, okay, it didn't 100% pay off, but what a week she had as well. And I looked back at the sprint between her and Vos, and I was convinced that Bredewold had that actually. And again, you never know until you see the photo finish, but it really looked convincing that she'd taken that. And again, just shows that she put everything into trying. So yeah, I think they gave us plenty to talk about.
Well, that is a perfect place to stop, I think, Rebecca, because, well, we've covered at absolute breakneck speed as many of the topics that we could that came out of this week, and it has really kind of whetted our appetite, because, well, the stage racing in Spain continues, doesn't it? Actually, we've got Itzulia women coming up. We've got Vuelta a Burgos coming up. Historically, Vollering's done incredibly well. She's won almost kind of every stage, and she's, you know, gone on to take the overall there a number of times over. So I think this has been the perfect little springboard into that, to find out exactly where we all lie with the Tour de France. Fam, feels like that's almost on the horizon, and we've got the Giro ahead of that as well.
Oh, I'm always excited, but I'm even more excited than usual. Looking at the grand tours that we've got ahead, it really has whet our appetite. And I feel like we've talked again a lot about how Vollering would be beat. But we have to finish, I think, by saying what a absolutely stunning ride she put in at the Vuelta. And yeah, an emotional victory, a deserved victory, and she's looking very, very strong going into the upcoming races.
Yes, it's very ominous. Well, Rebecca, thank you so much for your company. I'll go and let you sit down in a quiet dark room and let that caffeine wear off. I'm sure that will help.
Unfortunately, I have two small children running circles around me, but well, not the baby. She's not that advanced yet.
But she's certainly been on the caffeine as well. If she was, then she would
she's
be.
She's already there.
Well, yes, thank you very much, Rebecca. And thank you, listeners. We'll be back towards the end of the month to recap on all the stage races so far.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Burney.
Military veterans and active duty service members, you could become a certified cyber warrior with just 12 weeks of training at My Computer Career. Cybersecurity specialists are in high demand, and IT pros with these skills often enjoy abundant opportunity and a great lifestyle. Protect our people, liberty, and treasured institutions from cyber threats. SkillBridge and other VA benefits are available to those who qualify. Learn more at mycomputercareer.edu/CWP. That's mycomputercareer.edu/CWP.